Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today's Wednesday, December 11th, 2024. On today's episode of the show, we're going to gather around the virtual water cooler and talk about what we've been watching. My name is Ben Pearson. I am an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film editor Brad Oman.
Hey, that's me.
All right, Brad, before we get into what we've been watching, tell me what you've been doing recently.
Yes. Well, it's the holiday season, so hoopty hoop and bibbledy bop and all that jazz. So there is, if there's one claim to fame that my hometown of LaPorte, Indiana has, it's that the movie Prancer was shot here. If there's two claims to fame, it's that Amy Brenneman's character says she's from LaPorte in the Sylvester Stallone movie Daylight. So there you go. But this year, Prancer is celebrating its 35th anniversary. And because of that, director John Hancock got together with the city of LaPorte and also the city of Three Oaks in Michigan, which is where the movie is set and was also partially shot, to do this big 35th anniversary celebration called Prancer Palooza. Which means a bunch of prancers or something like that. I don't know if that's what palooza does to a word. But so they're having like a part of it in Three Oaks and they're having part of it in LaPorte. And so in LaPorte, they're having a special screening. And me and my friends Ben Conowitz and Nate Laux, who co-host the Go Flix Yourself podcast with me, are co-hosting the Q&A with director John Hancock and star Rebecca Harrell Trickle, who played the young girl Jessica in Prancer, as well as the actress who played her Aunt Sarah in the movie. Sam Elliott was supposed to be here, but unfortunately there ended up being some kind of conflict with his schedule and he is no longer able to make it. And the same thing happened with Mark Ralston, who I was also particularly interested to talk to because he's been in Aliens and Shawshank Redemption and stuff. But unfortunately, he can't make it either. But it's still going to be a really fun event. We're doing some cool things ourselves to kind of like make it a little more exciting. We're going to do like this cool pre-show role that has like commercials from like 1989, like set from Christmas time and stuff like that. And before the movie, we're going to play like the kind of trailers that would have played with Prancer at the time and have a bunch of like retro movie theater bumpers and everything too. So it should be pretty fun.
That sounds like a blast, Brad. So I have to ask maybe a dumb question. What is Prancer? I don't think I've ever even heard of this movie.
What?
Yeah. What is this?
Interesting. So this is a Christmas movie. It's not as like popular as like a Home Alone or a Christmas Vacation because honestly, it's a bit more of a dramatic Christmas movie. And it's, if I'm being honest, it's a little bit of a downer because it's more serious. Honestly, it's kind of like if there were a Sundance Christmas movie. It's set in this very small rural town. There's this young girl named Jessica, and her family, she lives with her father. Her mother has passed away, and her father's played by Sam Elliott. And it's kind of hard times on their farm. They have an apple farm, and it's just not like a great time for them. And she comes to believe that Prancer, one of Santa's reindeer, has gotten lost from the North Pole and ends up in their woods. And so he's injured, and she secretly takes care of him on the farm and tries to hide it from her dad and stuff like that. Sam Elliott's kind of a grumpy dad in this one because he's just super stressed and he doesn't really know what to do, like with his wife being gone. And I would recommend watching it, you know, because it's a pretty good movie. It's not necessarily the most uplifting Christmas movie, but it's solid. It's a very grounded indie style Christmas movie, I would say. And it has Ariana Richards is in it. She has a small part as Jessica's friend in the movie. Johnny Galecki has a small role in it. Cloris Leachman is in it. Abe Vigoda is in it.
Oh wow!
Yeah.
Okay. So that sounds pretty rad.
Yeah, I would recommend just giving it a watch if you haven't seen it.
Okay, so that's Prancer. And how could people attend this event, Brad? Is it like you just free to the public, or do you have to get tickets at a website somewhere, or what?
Yeah, there are tickets. If you just look up like the LaPorte Civic Auditorium, or just type in Prancerpalooza like into Google, whatever, you can find it. It's happening here in LaPorte, Indiana on Sunday, December 15th. Doors open at 1 o'clock. The screening starts at 3. And like in between, there's like a free concert, and we're doing that little like pre-show video thing I was talking about. And they have a bunch of other stuff there too. Like they're going to have some like a live reindeer there and Santa Claus, and they're doing stuff for Toys for Tots and a bunch of stuff. So it's a cool little Christmas event happening here.
Excellent. All right. So let's get into what we've been watching. What have you been watching recently, Brad? It's end of the year. You've probably been doing a lot of end of the year catch up like I have.
Yes, I've been doing tons of it. And so I've been trying to sift through some last minute screeners and catch up on stuff that I missed. So the first thing that I caught, which hasn't fully been released in theaters yet, I believe it's been playing on the festival circuit and is starting to come out now, I think, is The Last Showgirl. Which is a new movie starring Pamela Anderson, of all people. And this is very much a role for her in the same vein as something like The Wrestler, but maybe like by way of like Support the Girls, or even like a little bit of Sunset Boulevard. And it's directed by Gia Coppola, and it follows Pamela Anderson as this aging showgirl in Las Vegas who has been working at this classic showgirl, you know, show in Vegas where like they have the big feathers on the head headpieces and like the sparkly brassieres and all that stuff with all the leg kicking and the occasionally, you know, topless kind of stuff, you know, a very classic Vegas thing. But the show, which is run by Dave Bautista, is about to close, and she's just not entirely sure what to do with herself. And she's very passionate about it as like her as an art, really. It's not like just a job to her. Like she really loves it and enjoys it. Jamie Lee Curtis is also in this movie in a supporting role. So is Kiernan Shipka, and Pamela Anderson is just phenomenal in this movie. It's a bit of a tragic story. It's one about, you know, a woman, you know, dealing with the fact that she's aging and being in, trying to continue to be in an industry that is very much about superficial, you know, details as far as looks, and like starts to kind of discard women when they reach a certain age. And it's just a phenomenal performance from her. It's very vulnerable. And I hope people see it. I think she just got a Golden Globe nomination too. Not that the Golden Globes are like, as you know, a big deal, but the fact that she is getting, you know, awards attention as award season starts, I think is a good indication of what kind of movie we're looking at here.
Okay, cool. So that's The Last Showgirl, and it seems like it'll be rolling out probably slowly over the course of the month, maybe into January as well. So keep an eye out for that. What else have you been watching, Brad?
I finally caught up with A Different Man. Have you seen A Different Man yet?
I did, yes.
Yeah, and this is that movie starring Sebastian Stan, where he has like this neurofibrosis kind of ailment, where he has a collection of tumors on his face that don't make him look like Sebastian Stan, obviously. And then he gets this experimental treatment that gets rid of all the tumors on his face. And so then he does look like Sebastian Stan, and he kind of starts having this different, more successful life. And the movie is really just about this character and like figuring out whether it was, you know, his ailment that was holding him back from having the life that he wanted or hoped for, or if it was really just him and who he is. And it's a really interesting examination about just like the identity, and it's an interesting pairing with like a movie like The Substance, I think, too, because it kind of approaches similar subject matter in a different way. And it also has Adam Pearson in it, who is somebody, an actor who actually does have the same disease that Sebastian Stan's character is suffering from. And he's fantastic in it as well. But yeah, I really like this movie a lot, and I think that Sebastian Stan, it was nice to see him in a role like this. You know, I think he's great and fresh, and he's been good in what was the name of the Pamela Anderson Tommy Lee series?
Oh yeah, watch that.
Was it just Pam and
Tommy?
Yeah,
I think that's right. Yeah,
yeah, he was great in that, and so it's been nice to see him expand out of obviously his big role in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And I like this movie a lot, and I think it's very good, and I was happy to finally catch up with it.
Excellent. Okay, so now I'm really curious to know what you think about this next movie, because it sounds like you did a Sebastian Stan double feature, or maybe not in the same night. I don't know when you watched this, but you watched two of his big performances of this year.
I did, yes, because Sebastian Stan this year also starred in The Apprentice, which has been kind of a controversial movie because it is about a young Donald Trump, and that's who Sebastian Stan plays in this movie. And it traces basically the origins of Donald Trump and how he started to become really the bigger name in New York that we all know today, and the kind of toxic figure in both business and politics that he would become, you know, later down the road. It follows him throughout the 70s and 80s in New York, when he was kind of still riding the coattails in the name of his father's success in the city. And then he meets Roy Cohn, a famously deceptive and corrupt lawyer. And you see that's kind of where Trump got the standards and rules that he lived by, and the stuff that really gave him like inspiration and ambition, and like the stuff that he outlines in like The Art of the Deal. And so it's stuff that he steals, and Jeremy Strong is the one who plays Roy Cohn, and that performance in itself is just incredible. He's this awful vampire of an asshole, and mm-hmm. you see Donald Trump start to pick up those traits. And that's not to say Donald Trump is a good guy to begin with, like and I want to say the movie humanizes Donald Trump, but not in a way that makes you sympathetic, but it shows you that like there was a time when he was not great, and he just happened to get worse. And Sebastian Stan is fantastic in this role because he's not doing a very obvious Trump voice. You know, it's not like an SNL impression, but he nails some of the subtleties of his speaking patterns, and even the way like his facial expressions, especially when he talks, the way he forms his lips and stuff like that. It's fascinating to watch, and it gets even more impressive as it goes on, because when he was younger, he didn't fully sound or look like the Donald Trump that like we know today. And as you get into like the 80s, you start to see that come out a little bit more, and some of that is also because of a little bit of Roy Cohn as well, who has a like a very orange fake tan all the time. Mm-hmm. But if this movie came out any other year, if it came out like 10 years from now, I think that it would be talked about a lot more, and people wouldn't be so hesitant to like just avoid it, because it is tough to watch knowing the things that are happening in the world right now, and knowing that we have what we have to deal with from Donald Trump for at least 4 years. And it's a shame, because Sebastian Stan is great in this movie, and I think it is a really measured and interesting origin story about this guy that now we unfortunately know way too much about.
Yeah, I agree. And I think maybe this is going to be one of those movies that like people catch up with later on, and maybe after his next term is over or whatever, people will eventually come back around to this movie, I hope, because I do think it is worth seeing. I think I was very like, I mean, as anyone... not anyone, obviously, based on the results of this election, but as a lot of people were, I was basically like allergic to even the idea of watching a movie like this. And I kind of like bit my tongue and went in and watched it anyway. And because I thought it was going to try to paint him as a sympathetic figure, and I just have no appetite for that personally. So I was surprised when it didn't do that. And I think there is a lot more here than initially might meet the eye or whatever. So I hope people track it down.
Yeah. It's definitely kind of along the lines of like The Social Network, where it kind of felt like maybe it's too soon to do a movie like this, but as time goes on, I think we'll realize, oh yeah, this is right on the money.
Yeah. I think, I don't know, in terms of the Trump of it all, I feel like I didn't really learn very much that I didn't already absorb just through, I don't even like read that much politics news and consume that much about him, but you know, there just sort of has been so much information shoved in my face about him over the past 10 years or whatever that I kind of feel like I knew a lot of this stuff. But watching Stan actually go through that transformation and almost become like kind of like a more of a cartoon character type of figure as his fame balloons near the end of the movie, and then really the Roy Cohn thing, the Jeremy Strong performance that you mentioned, I think that is like the true reason for people who might be like even more allergic to Donald Trump stuff than I was to watch this movie. And I certainly would not,
begrudge.
What is Yes, begrudge. Thank you, Jesus. I would not begrudge people the idea of like waiting for several years to catch up with this movie. I just hope they do eventually, because I think that Cone performance or the Jeremy Strong performance is worth checking out. So what else have you been watching, Brad?
I also watched The Order, and I really want to get this movie in front of people's eyes because I feel like a lot of people are sleeping on it and it hasn't been like talked about a great deal. It just hit theaters last weekend, so it's in theaters now. This is the latest movie from Justin Kurzel. And it is based on a true story, and it takes place in 1984 following the FBI's pursuit of a militia that is rising out of an Aryan Nation community. Jude Law plays this sort of grizzled FBI agent who's been tasked with like figuring out what they're doing, because there's been rumblings that Nicholas Holt's character has been kind of building a small group of people, and they've been robbing banks, building money to try and get themselves an army that has plenty of weaponry, and they plan on executing terrorist attacks and at various places at key points across the country and stuff like that. And Jude Law, first of all, is outstanding in this role. I would love to see him do more roles like this, because he really does just a fantastic job of playing this, you know, gruff FBI agent without being a cliche. And Nicholas Holt is also fantastic in this, because he plays this character with such cold conviction, but he also has a charm to him that it makes him scary, because you can see how somebody like this could convince other people to be on his side and to think that this is the right thing to do. And that's maybe the most terrifying thing, is not seeing that these people are like cartoonish, you know, monsters, but that they feel they do feel like regular people, and that they have the power to convince other people to also believe in evil, terrible things.
100%. Yeah,
this is just a great cat and mouse thriller. It's intense, it's suspenseful, there's some good action in it. Performances are outstanding. I really dug this movie. I hope people go out of their way to see it.
Yeah, the action is pretty good in it too. I mean, it's not like a full-on action movie. I would say it's more of like a thriller or something, I guess.
Yeah.
More of like a almost like a detective story type of thing. But the action when it hits, I think, is really effective and very well done. And yeah, man, it's such a scary movie to watch because of what you said, the Nicholas Holt performance, and like it's kind of a blueprint for white supremacy, basically. It's not you know, people wearing robes and burning crosses in the yard and being these sort of like goofy figures that, like, I'm thinking of something like Django Unchained, for example, where like these characters are like doofuses, basically. It's much more dirty and grounded and real, and like so easy to understand how people can, it's not even presented as like people making a big leap into it. You know, Nicholas Holt's character does such a good job of like reaching out and bridging that gap and capitalizing on whatever ailments these people are experiencing in their lives or their societies or their homes or whatever, and just being like, hey, come over here, we got the answer. And it's so magnetic in a terrible way. And it's really, I think, instructive for people who maybe wonder how this kind of thing can still be operating in our society, even though this movie, I think, takes place in like what, the '80s or something.
Yeah.
Right?
84, I think.
But yeah, there's so many like direct through lines to what's going on in the world right now. It's pretty wild. So yeah, The Order is the name of the movie, and it's in theaters right now. So definitely check that one out. So interestingly, Brad, you also did another sort of double feature type thing of another actor, and that's Nicholas Holt, who also appears in Juror Number 2, Clint Eastwood's new movie. So what did you think about this one?
Yes, yeah, it was kind of like a fun little double feature that I had. Man, I dug this movie a lot. I was intrigued by the trailer. I wasn't expecting a lot other than I heard some people talking about how good it was and how much of a bummer it was that Warner Brothers kind of buried this movie by only releasing it in like 50 theaters across the country for a little bit before it hits Max later this month. And I'm glad I went on my way to watch it, because I really do think this movie is fantastic. It has a very classic feel to it in the style of courtroom drama it is. We talked a little bit about this in one of our ranking episodes, because you kind of criticize the dialogue in this movie, and I actually,
yeah, so just to be clear, that episode has not come out yet. It's coming out like, I don't know, like middle of December, I think, or maybe the week of Christmas or something. So we thanked that episode.
About that, yeah,
Yeah, no worries. But yeah, people will hear us sort of argue about this, and then maybe we'll backfill some of that conversation now. So
So go ahead and say what you think about the dialogue in this movie.
Well, I just think the script of this movie is really weak. I talked about it, I think, with Chris, like a few weeks ago. And like the ideas in the movie are really solid, and the bones of the movie, I think, are super solid. Like, it's such a great premise. I just think the execution of it and the script getting you from point A to point B is just so awkward and so dumbed down. And it just feels, it's just like incredibly tough to watch, because it's just a lot of things that feel hard to swallow come right after one, right after the other. And then it's just a really inelegant script, I think. And it kind of, it took me out of the movie so often that it zapped the actual power that I think the movie had sort of lurking in its bones there. But what did you think about it?
Yeah, that's really fascinating to me, because for me, I think that that's a big part of like what made it feel kind of like a classic movie to me, like a movie that easily could have been made in like the 1950s or something like that. Because it's, I agree with you. I don't think it's necessarily the most like elegant or sharp dialogue, but I think it serves the movie well. Kind of similar to like, there were some criticisms as far as like how Trial of the Chicago 7 was depicted. And to me, that was another movie that like, I kind of feel like it calls back to like movies like Mr. Smith Goes to Washington or 12 Angry Men. And those movies are both incredible, and they're very well written. And I think this also is very well written. And it has a vintage feel to it. And so that, to me, it worked. And the performances all fed into that. In particular, aside from the fact that Nicholas Holt is great, and so is Toni Collette and Chris Messina. But I was particularly impressed by Cedric Yarbrough in this role, because he's somebody who is pretty much predominantly known for comedy. I'm not even sure if he's really done any dramatic roles like this. And he's very good in his supporting role in this, as one of the members of the jury alongside Nicholas Holt. But yeah, I thought this movie was fantastic. I was really impressed by it, considering I haven't really loved Clint Eastwood's movies for a little while now.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm glad you got something out of it. I definitely was just kind of, I felt myself like disconnecting from the movie more and more as it went along. But I'm really curious to see how people react to this once it hits Max, which is only a couple days from now, I think. So I think it's probably worth watching, because I think it's better than a lot of stuff that Clint Eastwood has done recently, as you're kind of alluding to there. So it might also be good, like as a kind of a family movie over the Christmas break or something, if you're looking for something that like everyone can agree on, and maybe not like the youngest kids, but there's nothing like egregious in here in terms of violence.
It's an adult drama, but there's no like crazy, you know, language or sex or anything like that.
Yeah Okay, so that's Juror number 2. It'll be on Max very soon. What else have you been watching?
I also watched September 5th, which is another new thriller that is coming out for award season. And this follows the true story of the Munich Olympics hostage situation that unfolded back in 1972. And this feels a little more timely than maybe it was ever intended to be, because it does deal with Israeli athletes being held hostage by a terrorist group. But the movie itself does not really dig into the politics or the complexity of that situation. It is more so more of a surface level approach to how the ABC sports team that was there covering the Olympics was forced to quickly and deliberately deal with the coverage of the event. They specifically didn't want the news team to take over. Peter Jennings was there helping them with ABC sports coverage, and he even tried to get them to step aside. But you have Peter Sarsgaard playing the guy who's in charge of ABC sports, holding on to their coverage of the story. John Magaro is the other big lead in this, and this is a really great role for him. He's someone who's he's a character actor who you might have seen in movies like The Big Short or Past Lives and stuff like that. But he gives a great lead performance here. And it's a very taut thriller. It's very, very tense and suspenseful. And it's, for me, one of the most fascinating things about it was how it depicted different technical aspects of how they had to cover live stories back in the day. This was the first time that a tragic event like this was covered live on television, and like over 900 million people were watching when all of this happened. So like literally like the eyes of everybody were on this, and they make mistakes. And but you also see like kind of how deliberate and careful they had to be when covering stuff live like this. And even then, you know, mistakes are still made, but it feels like the focus on the technical aspects of it is something that shows like maybe the flaw that there is today in how we cover stuff live, because things happen so much faster and it doesn't take as much effort to cover certain things or to like give information to a large group of people. And it mm-hmm. feels like that's where news has sort of reached like a lower tier of like what they, you know, consider as far as like, oh, we're okay to report this. But even in this time in 1972, like you see like the mistakes that happen in hearing. And it's, you know, it's fascinating to watch. It's a really, really tense thriller. Performances are good. And despite the fact that it doesn't have a lot of depth to it as far as like the thematic elements, I think it's very, very well made, and it's a solid movie.
Yeah, definitely. I talked about this very briefly on another episode of the show, but one thing that I didn't mention, I'm glad you talked about it, was like seeing the technical aspects of it. And I loved watching the like the way that they put lettering on the screen and like shot stuff against a black background and like things like that I hadn't really thought about before, or if I did, it was like way back in school and I haven't thought about it in 20 years or something. So just seeing that kind of stuff be executed in like a high pressure environment like that, it just gave me more of an appreciation for the technical crews that used to just make stuff like that. And my God, 900 million people, that is like orders of magnitude bigger than, you know, the finale of Game of Thrones, for example, or something like that. It's hard to wrap your mind around how many people that was watching one thing at the same time. So good stuff there. So September 5th is the name of the movie. Did you watch a screener of this?
Yeah, I got a screener of this. It's supposed to be getting a limited release before the end of the year, and I think it's getting a wider release in January.
I think that's right. Yeah, I was going to say, I think mid-January is kind of where the date was floating around in my head, so I'll double-check that, but I think that's right. All right, so before we take a break, what's the last thing you wanted to talk about here that you've been watching?
The last thing I want to talk about is a streaming service that I had been recommended several times and finally got around to watching some stuff on it, and that's called Dropout. We've talked about this a little bit in Slack because there's some fans on the Slash Film staff. And so this is a streaming service that's run by the production company that used to be College Humor, basically. And it's a collection of different kinds of comedy shows that are largely based on improv comedy, different kinds of game shows, panel shows, and stuff like that, all with different premises that offer a lot of fun for comedians to play with. And they're not like super famous comedians. Like, you're not necessarily always going to see someone like, you know, Jim Gaffigan on there, but they do occasionally have people like Ben Schwartz and stuff like that. The shows that I've seen so far that have been the most fun is one is called Very Important People, where they have the same host of the show, and what they do is they bring in one of, you know, their comedians, and they have a professional makeup team put a bunch of like prosthetic pieces of makeup on them and turning them into a very specific character. And like, I mean, full on makeup jobs too, like actual big like body pieces and facial prosthetic and all of that stuff. And the people getting the makeup on them, they don't get to see what they're being turned into until they're done. And then when they are, they get to look at themselves and they have a short window of time to come up with a character. And then they're interviewed on the show for like 15 to 20 minutes in character. And it is so funny to hear like the things they come up with and the interactions they have. And like they sometimes can't help themselves and they fully break because something happens that's so funny. And one of the things that they say, they're just not expecting it to land the way it does. I've been laughing so hard at this show, and I haven't watched all the episodes yet, but everything I've seen from it, it is so funny. And it's such a fun premise. Like, I'm so jealous of everybody who gets to play with that kind of framework, because it just seems like such fun.
Awesome.
There's another one called Make Some Noise, where they run through different like game show kind of things. And like one of the really fun ones that they do is they give a line to the three panelists that they have, and then they give them different ways of saying that line. Like, okay, do it, but someone just threw something at you. Or do it like you're on a soap opera. Or do it like you're giving, you know, a speech as the president or something like that. And so if you look around on like TikTok and stuff like that, you'll see some, there's some great clips out there with Ben Schwartz doing it. But that one's really fun. And then there's a cool game show one that I think some of the listeners here would really like. It's called Actually. And it's a game show style premise where they will read a short bit of text about some kind of geeky property like Game of Thrones, Lord of the Rings, Star Wars, and the contestants have to figure out what is factually wrong in that. And when they buzz in, they have to go actually, and then explain what the super nerdy detail is that is wrong in there. So that's a lot of fun to watch. But yeah, this is I'm starting to dig through even more some of these shows. But it's super cheap too. I think it's like $6 or $7 a month. And so if you haven't tried it yet, I would look up some clips online just to see the kind of stuff they do. But it is so funny, and I can't wait to watch more.
All right. You're the second person who's told me that Dropout is great. BJ was preaching the gospel of Dropout on this podcast a little while ago. So, I'll have to check that out. So, Dropout, you can just find that. Is it, they have their own website, I assume? Or is
They have their own website and you just go and subscribe to it. And they have an app on Apple TV and all the other, you know, various devices for streaming things.
Cool. All right. Let's take a break and then we'll come back and get into the rest of the show.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What makes a great pair of glasses? At Warby Parker, it's all the invisible extras without the extra cost. Their designer quality frames start at $95, including prescription lenses, plus scratch-resistant, smudge-resistant, and anti-reflective coatings, and UV protection, and free adjustments for life. To find your next pair of glasses, sunglasses, or contact lenses, or to find the Warby Parker store nearest you, head over to warbyparker.com. That's warbyparker.com.
All right, so I wanted to mention a few things that I was watching, Brad. James Mangold directed a biopic called A Complete Unknown about Bob Dylan. Have you seen this yet?
No, I was supposed to, and then the weather here got really shitty, so now I can't see it until next week.
Okay, I didn't know anything about Bob Dylan except that he famously went electric at some point and kind of shook up the traditional folk music community by doing so. And this is not a cradle-to-the-grave style biopic. It's basically a chronicle of Bob Dylan, who's played by Timothy Chalamet in this movie, bursting on the scene, becoming a huge deal, and helping to redefine what folk music could do in America, and then kind of chafing at the box that he's been put in by the label and audiences and stuff like that. And I think Chalamet is okay as Bob Dylan, but to me, the most interesting thing about this entire movie is that it ultimately repeats a few of the same themes that James Mangold explored in Ford versus Ferrari, a movie that came out a few years ago that I really liked, which is like, this is about creativity and like artistic integrity and how to survive creatively in a system that is not built to take risks, and kind of how alienating and like isolating it can be to stick to your guns when the world is demanding certain things from you and you're no longer really like willing to give those things to people. So it feels very much like another metaphor for filmmaking in that way, and kind of like working in the studio system. And I think there's some interesting stuff to be gleaned from it if you view it through that lens. And I just kind of thought that it took a little too long to actually make that point. And before it gets there, it just feels like kind of a typical biopic, which is to say like a little bland, but it comes alive when the music is being played. So I'm curious how people are going to react to this, because I know Bob Dylan is like a huge, huge cultural figure, and he's just not somebody that I have a real sort of personal relationship with. What is your relationship to Bob Dylan's music? Has he been somebody who's been in your rotation for a long time, or what?
Well, he's my grandfather. I'm familiar with Bob Dylan's place in music history, and the fight of being a folk musician who turned to electric and kind of, you know, betrayed what people felt like folk music was back in those days. But a lot of what I understand and know about him comes from having, you know, a rock history class in college. And I don't love his music. I like, you know, some of his songs. And I'm familiar with, you know, obviously the more popular songs. But I wouldn't call myself a Bob Dylan fan. But I am curious about this movie because Timothée Chalamet does seem like he puts in a good performance, especially when it comes to doing all the singing. It seems like he really nailed Bob Dylan's voice in that way. So I'm curious to see that. And I'm always down for a James Mangold movie. So yeah, I'll definitely be seeing it here soon.
Yeah, it's also nice to see Edward Norton in a supporting role. It just seems like he hasn't been around very much, at least since like Glass Onion or something. And even before that, it kind of felt like he disappeared for a little bit, or at least was not in movies that I was watching personally. So it was always nice to see him pop up in a supporting part. Okay, I also want to talk about a Criterion Collection disc that I got recently of a movie called Eastern Condors from 1987. This is essentially The Dirty Dozen, but reimagined as a Hong Kong action movie. And it's kind of as awesome. It's as awesome as that sounds. So Sammo Hung directed this. And if you think about like those classic Vietnam War movies about rescuing somebody behind enemy lines, this is basically one of those, but with people doing just ludicrous and outrageous stunts along the way. It's really, there's some jaw-dropping stuff in here. There are like people going over the edge of real waterfalls and jumping out of massive trees to take out enemy soldiers underneath them that are like dozens of feet below them, and like leaping off of a small cliffside and landing in the back of a moving vehicle. Just like incredibly dangerous stuff. And then there's also a lot of like the kind of machine gun running and gunning that you would expect from a classic war movie. So I think there's a lot to like about this. I had never seen it before, but I saw that it was coming to the Criterion Collection. And I was like, you know what? This might be fun. And it definitely is. There's also like a James Bond style conclusion to the movie set in this big missile facility that looks like one of those sets that Ken Adam, who was the famous production designer, cooked up in the Sean Connery era of Bond. So I think, yeah, Eastern Condors is really solid. If you're into martial arts movies, I would say give this one a shot.
When did this come out?
1987.
Oh, okay.
So it's been a while, but yeah, it's good stuff. I recently talked about No Country for Old Men. I rewatched that for the first time in a while. And I talked about it not too long ago on the podcast, but Criterion recently put out a 4K version of it. And I got that. And man, it just looks excellent and has a couple of fun special features that I wanted to highlight. So specifically, there's a 40-minute interview with Roger Deakins, the cinematographer, and one of the producers. And then there's also a separate interview about the same length with Joel and Ethan Coen that was recorded this year. So it was really nice to see the two of those guys together after kind of splitting them. You know, they like split up as filmmakers. I don't know if they're making movies together anymore. Maybe they will one day or something, but they kind of like went their separate ways. So it was nice to see them together on screen again and like reminiscing and talking about their movie and stuff. And like the interview being 40 minutes long, that's long enough for them to actually get into like some real minutia about the making of the movie that they just absolutely would not have time for in a regular junket style setting. So I loved listening to them talk about the movie and really like dig into the details of making it. They're like talking about like, there's a moment during the sort of call it friendo gas station scene where Anton Chigurh puts a wrapper down on the counter, and like the camera focuses on that as this wrapper goes from being scrunched to like expanding back into its normal state, and it's this plasticky wrapper making the sound and stuff. And they're talking about how there's no real score in the movie and how just being able to have the freedom to focus in on a really tiny detail like that. And they were just talking about what that sort of meant to them as filmmakers and like how they were able to execute something like that. So I really recommend that 4K disc of No Country for Old Men if you're a fan of that movie. There's some awesome stuff on there. And then the last thing I wanted to talk about is a movie called Seconds, which I had never even heard of. Are you familiar with this movie from 1966? John Frankenheimer directed it.
No, I don't think I know what this movie is.
Yeah. So James Wong Howe, who's one of the most acclaimed and beloved cinematographers of all time, shot this thing. And it really comes out of the gate hot with like this incredible framing that uses that technique where there's like a body mounted camera pointing backwards at the actor's face while they're walking, and they stay static in the frame while the world moves around behind them. You know, I was kind of under the impression that that technique didn't come into play until many, many years later. But evidently this movie from the mid 60s was one of the earliest films to use it.
Huh.
And the story is about, it's about this guy who is played by John Randolph, who is the actor who played Clark Griswold's dad in Christmas Vacation. That's where I know him from.
Okay.
And I'd never seen him in anything else, but he plays this guy who is kind of like a middle-aged banker who gets roped into faking his death and having this elaborate plastic surgery to change his identity. And he quickly realizes that this new life where he's played by Rock Hudson is not all that it's cracked up to be. It's kind of like a different man in that way. But I think the movie has a lot on its mind, and there's some really cool, like, the grass is always greener stuff in there about the lure of freedom from a seemingly humdrum life, and how even if you change your appearance, you can't actually escape from yourself, which is another thing that I think A Different Man taps into pretty well. But it overall, it's like, it's pretty slow and it's kind of a meandering plot. And I'm not really sure that I would recommend this to be like at the top of anyone's watch list. But what I would recommend though, Brad, is the box set that it came in. So Criterion sent me this big 40th anniversary box set.
Oh, you got it, right, you son of a bitch.
Yeah, it's awesome, man. It's got 40 curated movies in it, and it has stuff like 8 and a Half and All That Jazz and In the Mood for Love, Night of the Living Dead, Barry Lyndon, Do the Right Thing,
Armageddon,
Man of the Hunter. No, and Armageddon is not in there as far as I know. But there are a ton of movies in there that I haven't seen. So I'm going to be talking more about those as I sort of check my way through that next year. But the box set comes with this big book that I haven't even had time to dip into yet. And this is not an ad, but I swear to God. But as of this recording, I just got an email today that the whole set is 30% off at Criterion.com. So if you're either looking for a Christmas present for someone, or maybe if you get flush with cash during Christmas and you are looking for a great cross section of film history that's all in one place with like the added bonus of it being in physical media form, check out this box set. I think the nickname of it is CC40. So I'm really enjoying that so far. So Seconds, this movie from 1966, was the first movie that I watched from there. All right, let's get into what we've been eating. What have you been eating, Brad, as we head into mid-December here?
Here we go. You got a couple holiday treats that are out there for you. First, there's new cinnamon swirl Lindt chocolate truffles. I always like trying the new flavor of these. Lindt chocolate truffles are one of my favorite chocolate kind of sweets to get. The best one is the mint cookie crumble one that comes out around the holidays. But this one's very good too. It's a white chocolate, and it has a little bit of like a cream cheese cinnamon roll frosting flavor, of course, with some cinnamon spice sprinkled in there as well. It's kind of like having like a candy, a chocolate truffle version of like a Cinnabon, basically.
Okay.
And the cinnamon flavor isn't like super overpowering or anything like that. And the white chocolate with like the little bit of like cream cheese flavor gives it a nice... nice pairing with that too. So yeah, it's they're very good. I like them a lot.
Excellent.
There's also a new flavor of Flips covered pretzels. This one is snickerdoodle flavored. So if you like snickerdoodle cookies, whether it's the holidays or not, I think you'll enjoy the mix of cinnamon and sugar and whatnot that goes into this one. It's also like a white chocolate covering rather than your regular chocolate covering. I really like this one as well. Sweet. I think that's most easily found at Dollar Tree, but you might see it at other places as well. I like to try a lot of different flavors of energy drinks because it's just a good way that I get my caffeine when I'm not having coffee in the mornings. And one of the best that I have ever had came out just recently, and that is a Welch's Grape flavor ghost energy drink. It tastes just like Welch's Grape soda, but it is a zero sugar energy drink, and it is delicious. If you like grape soda, especially if you specifically like Welch's grape soda, I can't recommend this one enough because the flavor is perfect. It is so good, and I love it.
Nice.
Yeah.
Sweet. Okay.
There's also three Jolly Rancher flavored energy drinks available in watermelon, green apple, and blue raspberry. The only one I tried was the watermelon because that's my favorite Jolly Rancher flavor. And really, I just love a good artificial watermelon flavor in, you know, candy and gummies and whatnot. So I tried that one, and they did a fantastic job of capturing the flavor of a watermelon Jolly Rancher in an energy drink. And that is also a sugar-free energy drink, which is nice. So that's a good one to try as well. Those seem like they're popping up pretty frequently at Speedway, but I think they should be available like at a lot of convenience stores and stuff like that now. And then
Okay. The
last thing I tried is not a new thing, but it's a thing that is coming back for like the first time in a long time. And that is frosted cinnamon roll Pop-Tarts. Funnily enough, there has been a frosted cinnamon roll like Pop-Tarts bites pouch out there that you can get. But this actual Pop-Tart flavor has been missing for a while. But now it's back. And the old form of it, it used to have like it was a drizzle of frosting across the Pop-Tart rather than like the one like layer of frosting that you usually find on your traditional frosted Pop-Tarts. But this time it is that full on like frosting layer that's on it rather than having it drizzled across it. And someone had asked on my Instagram, Brad's Junk, which, by the way, if you don't follow Brad's Junk, that's where you can find out about a bunch of other cool snacks and drinks and stuff that I find. Someone asked if it tasted a lot different from the brown sugar and cinnamon Pop-Tart, which is like one of their staples. And I can confirm, if you have never had it, yes, it does, because the inside filling is very similar to like the kind of cinnamon goo you would find inside of like a cinnamon roll, a Cinnabon and whatnot. And the frosting that's on top of it does have a like familiar like cream cheese frosting flavor to it. And so it's not just like the brown sugar cinnamon one with a different frosting. It is very good. And I'm glad they're back because it's been so long since I'd had them.
Okay, so that's Frosted Cinnamon Roll Pop-Tarts. Real quick, before we go, Brad, I have a question about how you find out about this stuff. Do you get, sometimes we get press, well, not sometimes, every day, we get press releases in the movie and TV world about new stuff that's coming out or studios sending out blasts of information that they want people to have and publicize or whatever. Do you get press releases for all of these snack foods and stuff? Are you on lists where you get official information from these companies that kind of lays out what they're doing or like, hey, this thing is coming back after being away for a couple of years or whatever?
Yeah, not all the time. But I do have connections with some companies where I get press releases and they'll send me samples of stuff and they'll give me a heads up of like when things are coming out. There's also like an organization of like snack influencers on social media who do kind of similar things that what we do with entertainment news, where they dig and they like find out about scoops ahead of time, or they hear about leaks from people who work at different roles in certain companies, and they find out about like a new Mountain Dew or something like that that's coming out, and there's pictures that leak out there. A lot of the companies, they'll also just totally surprise announce stuff like on their social media and stuff like that, and then everyone just like picks it up and they're like, oh, hey, this is coming out. And there's times where it's like the grocery industry doesn't have like a very firm way of like keeping stuff from getting out ahead of time, because there are so many grocery stores and there are so many managers and stuff like that who like don't necessarily pay attention to like when stuff is supposed to be on shelves. And so stuff will just come out on shelf before it's like officially announced by the company. And someone finds it on shelves and they're like, hey, I just found this.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. So it's, so that happens a lot. And plus now, like in the past few years, I've noticed that the lines have really been like completely shifted and almost disappeared as to when like holiday stuff begins and ends, where like I literally just saw that like there's a Reese's Easter peanut butter cup thing that like has already been spotted at a gas station, and it's December.
Wow.
But like this year, like the Halloween stuff arrived super early at like the beginning of August. The Christmas stuff was starting at the beginning of October. And so like, it's just all the lines have been blurred and stuff is just coming out all the time now. So I also constantly just go to stores myself and just like look at shelves and see what's new and snap, you know, pictures myself and everything. So
are there people in this community who are even more intense about this stuff than you are that keep like up-to-date databases of what's on shelves when and like how long it's been since a certain thing has been on the market or stuff like that?
So I don't necessarily know how intense they are about it. There are certain very specific snack influencers that like do seem to keep close track about it. I think more so it's a lot of like websites that cover food and stuff like that that pay close attention to figure out like when the last time something was out was, or when something is given like a graphics refresh on the box, but it's not like a new product or a flavor change or something like that.
Oh, nice.
There are some people out there who like they really dig in and they'll get the scoops of like Starbucks menus before it comes out and stuff like that. So yeah, it's a whole, you know, like industry thing in itself, as like it is with the way we cover entertainment news. So
Wow. Okay. All right, cool. So I'm going to put a link to your Instagram in the show notes if people want to check that out and follow your account there if they are not doing so already. And that's going to do it for today's show. You can find more about a lot of what we talked about on the show at slashfilm.com. Slash Film Daily is typically published every weekday, bringing you the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That helps us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thanks so much for listening. And I just want to say real quick before we go, I'm not 100% sure that we're going to have an episode tomorrow. I hope we do. But man, we're just, in terms of planning end of the year stuff and getting all of our lists together and everything, our schedule is slammed. And then we're also like sort of pre-recording some stuff for Christmas week when we're going to be off. So I may not have time to actually record like a legitimate episode for tomorrow, but we're definitely going to be back on Friday with a War of the Rohirrim themed episode. So stay tuned for that.
And if you need a replacement movie podcast, like I couldn't recommend Go Flix Yourself more. It is a podcast that I co-host with my friends and we talk about movies and fuck around. So like, if you like that kind of assorted nonsense, you could easily check that out. Or if you're a Saturday Night Live fan, like I am, you can also check out the 10 to 1 podcast, where me and those same chuckle fucks on that other podcast review and recap episodes of Saturday Night Live and talk about other assorted things about the sketch show. So go ahead.
Absolutely shameless, Brad. I love it. that'll do it for the episode. Thanks very much, and we'll talk to y'all later.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.